From WHQR Public Media in Wilmington, North Carolina, it's the Coastline Candidate Interviews. I'm Rachel Lewis Hilburn. North Carolina's congressional district map has faced criticism for years. In 2018, a federal court declared it unconstitutional and gerrymandered to favor Republican candidates. The court ordered the maps be redrawn. There was a stay of that order, and then several more rounds in the courts. The most recent ruling in December of last year ordered that maps drawn by Republicans in November would be used in the 2020 election only. Once this year's census is complete, another round of redistricting starts for 2021. North Carolina's 7th Congressional District has shifted this way. The old map covered all of New Hanover, Brunswick, Pender, Columbus, Sampson, Duplin, and Wayne counties, with portions of Johnston and Bladen counties. But the new maps, the 7th District now includes all of Bladen and Johnston counties, in addition to New Hanover, Brunswick, Pender, Columbus, Sampson, and an eastern slice of Harnett County. Wayne now belongs to District 1, and Duplin County is part of the 3rd Congressional District. David Rauser has represented the 7th District since 2014, when he faced Democratic challenger Jonathan Barfield, who was and is a New Hanover County Commissioner. That race was a rout. Rauser beat his Democratic opponent by 22 points. 2 years later, the same year Donald Trump won the presidency, David Rauser beat his Democratic challenger again by almost the same margin, nearly 22 points. In 2018, Rauser won a third term, but the margin was a little tighter. Democrat Dr. Kyle Horton, now a candidate for New Hanover County Commissioner, lost to Rauser by about 13 points. This year, as Congressman Rauser seeks a fourth term, he faces challenger Chris Ward, who beat out two other Democratic candidates in the primary. Chris Ward grew up on a farm that produced tobacco, corn, soybeans, wheat, and some produce in Tabor City, which is in Columbus County. He is currently a project manager and engineer with a company, Design Group, that is, in part, a pharmaceutical consulting company. He describes his work as bringing new drug products to market. He also owns and operates a real estate business, buying, selling, flipping, mortgaging, and renting houses. He joins me now. Chris Ward, welcome to Coastline.
Hey, thank you very much. It's great to be here. Thanks for having me today.
Great to have you here. Now, on your website, you say you're running as a Democrat, but you encourage North Carolinians of all political beliefs to stop and listen before they let that turn them away. What do you mean by that? Are you saying that being a Democrat is off-putting to people in your district?
I know that a large percentage of the North Carolina 7th Congressional District is Republican, and there's a lot of Democrats out there that have voted Republican recently that have really never changed their party affiliation. So there's the term, I say Democrat is not a dirty word. So it was Democrats that actually brought Social Security into existence in the 1930s and in the 1960s, Medicare. So those two fundamental programs, Social Security and Medicare, are things that that Democrats brought into the system. So I'm running as a Democrat. I've not always been a Democrat. I think about 10 years ago, I changed my mind and decided that that I'm not a Republican anymore, that I'm definitely a Democrat.
Now, have you ever held elective office before in any other capacity?
No, not at all. So I've never run for office in my entire life. So I was asked, why did I shoot so big? Why such a lofty goal as congressman for? I thought that I can definitely do a better job than the guy that's in there now. So my job right now is to be able to bring people to bring together a consensus, to get people to do work together and to be part of a team to accomplish goals.
What would you say your top priority is at this point? If you could accomplish one change,
I would say definitely we've got to get COVID-19. Oh, one change in policy. I think that the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, is something that my opponent has voted against time and time and time again. I think that we're too rich a nation not to have affordable and accessible health care for all people. So my opponent has voted countless times to get rid of the Affordable Care Act. That would eliminate some 20 million people from the rolls of health care. And we just don't need that in a nation as rich as what we are. So I want to see everyone with affordable health care. I've read stories where people have won the lottery and said, what will you do with your lottery winnings? Well, you know, when you say pay for your health care and not lose your house or your car, then that's that to me means that we've got to do something a little different about that.
Now, North Carolina has struggled for years to keep high quality teachers. Wages in the state still are not very competitive. But you talk about education being important to you on your campaign website. Is teacher pay largely the work of the state legislature? What would you do in the U.S. House to improve public education in North Carolina?
So it is the responsibility of the North Carolina legislature to determine the funding for schools. But I think the Republican legislature in the past has not appreciated teachers and education like I have. I'm very much a product of the North Carolina school system. I grew up and went to a public school, Tabor City High School, and went to Tabor City my entire life. But then I went on to college, to NC State. And I really think that we need appropriate funding for our teachers, for our schools. And I think you can be anything you want to be in this nation. You can come from a small town in Tabor City, North Carolina, go get a nuclear engineering degree, and maybe, and with your votes out there, become congressman one day. So I think the world is your oyster. You can do anything it is you want to do in this world. And I think our education system in North Carolina, you can do that. And I think we need to fund teachers and the school systems appropriately. We can do it. I love North Carolina.
Do you believe that climate change is impacting the 7th District? And if so, in what ways? And what role do you think congressional leaders have in planning for or adapting to it or even working to mitigate change?
So I definitely believe in climate change. I think that the sea levels are rising, the world is getting hotter. You can definitely tell that this year with the wildfires out in the West, the number of hurricanes that we've seen, I think we had an unprecedented year where there were two hurricanes in the Gulf of Mexico at the same time. They said we hadn't seen that in 100 years. My opponent does not believe in science. He does not believe that sea level is rising. He introduced a bill, I think when he was in the Senate, that would where people joked, if you can't trust the science or don't believe the science, you can just legislate it out of the out of this world. But that's not the case. So I do believe it's real. I think that we need to protect our coastlines. We need to protect our forest, our air, our water. So it's definitely real. And I think that the federal government has a responsibility to help communities like Carolina Beach and Kerr Beach and down in the Brunswick County beaches. We've got to figure out how to sustain our lifestyle.
What are some of the specific ideas you have for protecting the coasts and protecting our forests?
So I agree with the beach renourishment that's done every 2 or 3 years or 3 years here at, say, Carolina Beach and Wrightsville Beach and stuff. So, the sea level is rising, the tide is coming in, and you can see that the coastline's being eroded. As for protection of our air, our water, our land, I know that Kenmore's in DuPont along the Bladen county line and stuff that's been pouring toxic chemicals into the river. I'm glad that Josh Stein is going to sue Kenmore's for that. I want to figure out why they were be allowed to dump into the river in the first place. I think we want to be good corporate partners with the corporations, but at the same time, we can't allow them to harm like what they've done with Kenmore's and that plant.
You know, part of the issue, some folks would argue, is that the EPA has not regulated those toxic compounds. So because they're unregulated, then the state level, the Department of Environmental Quality, isn't able to actually mandate levels for those. So how could you, as a freshman congressman, if you were to win, influence the EPA when this has gone on for decades?
Right. So I think every year that we're learning more and more stuff about the things that we use in everyday life. I mean, it used to be that a water bottle that, you know, you would drink out of, they say now there's some chemical in it that they've now eliminated. They say don't microwave stuff in plastic containers, instead use glass. So there's stuff out there that we don't know. We don't know what an acceptable limit is, and maybe there is no acceptable limit. So there's a lot of things out there that we don't regulate, and I'm not necessarily in favor of regulating them, but if there's 100 things on the list that they're dumping into the environment, into the land, into the water, maybe we need to look at all of those things and try to see what an acceptable limit is and figure out what they can or cannot release into our rivers. So I would work with the EPA. I think the EPA needs more teeth. I think we need to do more research and science to figure out what these chemicals are, how they affect people. And we need to get better control over this and their polluting of our rivers.
On your campaign website, you've said that you own a gun yourself. How do you think firearms should be regulated or not in this country? Where are we going wrong if you think you can improve that?
Right. So this is a tough issue right here. So I'm definitely a Second Amendment supporter. I own a gun. I have a concealed carry handgun permit. I think it was 1 or 2 years ago that a state trooper in Columbus County was killed as he was trying to, you know, stop somebody in the middle of the night. And you see stories like that. And there's a lot of people out there bent on doing other people harm so for the vast majority of people, gun ownership is something that they have, they use, they go hunting, they protect their homes and their family. And then there's a large part of that is the criminal element that's been stolen, that don't have any regard for human life. So I would be for universal background checks when you buy a gun, so that would be across the entire nation. I think we have to eliminate it. You constantly see stories of like Sandy Hook and Las Vegas and stuff, and it's heartbreaking. And people will say, and if during those times we're not able to come together to do some kind of gun reform law, then it's probably not going to happen. But we need to continue to push. I think the American public is changing as we move forward, that the thoughts on guns and on other issues are changing as the nation evolves. So maybe one day, you can simply go buy a gun and you do a universal background check, and there'll be a lot more information for them to check up on you, see if you've been in a mental institution, see if you've been criminally charged or incarcerated, and keep those guns out of the hands of those people. But for the vast majority of people, I think they're law-abiding citizens, and we should not do anything to infringe on their gun rights.
You're listening to the Coastline Candidate Interviews. Today, our focus is North Carolina's 7th Congressional District, which includes all of New Hanover, Brunswick, Pender, Columbus, Sampson, Bladen, and Johnston counties, and a slice of Harnett. Democratic challenger Chris Ward is with me now. Your opponent, the incumbent, has raised almost $1.2 million by the end of June. You had raised about $16,000 by the end of September, have a little more than $7,000 cash on hand. This seat, as you probably know, is widely considered to be a Republican safe seat. And this kind of links back to what we talked about earlier in terms of, you know, you've never held elective office before, but you wanted to see what was possible. But why mount a campaign if you can't really compete financially? How do you think about that?
So let me say this. I know that I'm an underdog. I know that I'm not expected to win. But I don't know how to take no for an answer. I have for all my life been an underdog. I never thought that I would leave the farm and go to NC State and become a nuclear engineer and get my education and later my business and make money and have nice cars and houses and stuff. That I am the epitome of the American dream. I have gone from, I really do think that, you can do anything in the world that you set your mind to. And so the 7th district is heavily gerrymandered. The Republican legislature has seen to that. After Rouser, my opponent, lost in 2012 to Mike McIntyre, the Republican legislature then added Johnston County into the jurisdiction to include his hometown. And that's what kind of swung it over to him in that, during that time. So yeah, I think I can do anything. I think the American people this time think that they can, with their help, I know we can do it. And it's not me that will lose. I mean, yeah, I'll lose, but or could lose, but it's the American people, it's North Carolina that will win if we can get me into Congress.
What events have you had the chance to attend, virtually or otherwise, where people can meet you and hear from you and the incumbent? Have you done any debates or events together?
So I've reached out to David Rouser's office for and asked for a debate, but I've not heard anything from him at all. So I did approach him with a debate, and because I am such an underdog, and because I don't think he's ever mentioned my name once. So if you don't give any attention to me, then maybe that's the first rule of politics: never mention your opponent's name. So, but we did do a Zoom call with the Columbus County Chamber of Commerce, where he and I were both there, and we expressed our opinions on the government had done in the COVID-19. It wasn't a debate as much as it was a question for each of us. I've attended tons of Zoom meetings, just like this now, as we communicate remotely. I've been to marches for George Floyd. I've been to rallies. I've been all over the 7th Congressional District meeting people. Just this week, I'm at the polls in all the counties trying to meet people, and as they go to the polls this week and next week.
Well, you had started to answer a question about COVID-19, and we all know that even coronavirus is political now. There are critics of the governor's executive orders, which were signed to stop the spread of COVID-19. Some call it hysteria. Some say this has been a Democratic issue designed to slow the economy and discredit the president. Where are you on this?
So COVID-19 has definitely changed our 2020, this year. I think the federal government has failed miserably at their response to it. I think Trump has, he knew sooner than what he told people. He could have reacted much sooner, much better. He was told explicitly that it was he should have treated it like a war. He should have told people sooner. He should have nationalized he should have gotten resources out there much sooner. It's amazing. Like I've read and heard that like South Korea, another industrialized country, has 50 million people, but only had 300 deaths from COVID-19. So how can a country like that with 50 million people only have 300, not in a day, not in a week, but 300 total? So we have failed the American people. The federal government's first response is to protect its people. And we've not done that. We could have acted sooner. We could have done more. And I don't think that 200 plus thousand people have died. On a personal note, my mom, she called me yesterday as I was, and my dad was taken to the hospital, and he has a COVID test, but he's got to wait 3 days for the results. So right now he has a fever of 102. He's on antibiotics, so I'm wishing him well. But I know that his plight is that of others here in North Carolina, where, you know, you wear your mask, you do what you're supposed to, but we've all got to come together. Wear a mask to protect others. Don't feel like it's an infringement on your personal rights. You wear a mask because you need to protect others. It's like no shirt, no shoes, no service at a restaurant. We can implement that sort of stuff. So for the next little future, let's just try to protect others so that people like my dad and your dad and other people, that we can protect them.
And of course, best wishes for your family, Chris. I know that can be a scary time.
Thank you.
Yeah. You mentioned attending marches for George Floyd. Given this global conversation about white supremacy, what would you do to contribute to the conversation around racial reconciliation? And what have you learned just this year in 2020 about it?
So I tend to think of myself as a smart man. I think that there's smarter people but what I've learned this year is that the history that I was taught in school is not always the correct history or the entire history. So that say that the history is written by the victors. So just this year, I did not know that there were a Tulsa race riot in Tulsa, Oklahoma. I did not realize that even happened. this was the first year that I found out about that. I did not know that there was a coup d'etat in Wilmington. So all of these things that were left out of the history books or glossed over, or it definitely just, we need to be able to realize our history so we're not bound to repeat it. I think that had I known, and I tend to learn more and more every single day, and I think a lot of North Carolinians don't know all of their history and the plight that Black people and color and people of color have had over the years. And I don't think that they've been given a fair shake. And so we need to really have a conversation and see what we can do to correct that, just to give them a fair shake.
Do you believe that Confederate monuments should be on public grounds?
So there's a lot of people out there that would say that that's our history, I think if we go back and we try to think about history, those Confederate monuments were not put in place until, say, like the 1920s. And then that was meant as a fear and intimidation tactic for Blacks not to vote, that they would be put up in public places, that you would see a Confederate general standing over public grounds. And that was meant, that was at the rise of the KKK and other things. So again, our history is not quite clear. We have a tendency to say that was part of our history, they were put up, but no, that when they were put up, it was because of they were for voter intimidation, for Black intimidation. So I think that those should be in, I don't want to say specifically each one, but we need to have a conversation on those, not just yank them down or anything, but let's figure out when they were put up, why they were put up, who put them up. Can they go into cemeteries? Can they go into museums? Can they go on other pieces of land? Can they maybe leave them, but also put up other statues? There's other people to commemorate and talk about.
So you talk about a living wage on your website. What does that mean to you? And how would you change this issue for those struggling without burdening small businesses?
Right. So here's the thing. If we say the minimum wage in America is $15, well, that's great. But then at the same time, when you go to McDonald's or you go to a restaurant, the price of a burger won't be $3 or $4 anymore. It'll go up proportionally too. So you want to, you can't stifle business. I think that the minimum wage needs to be increased. By what amount, I'm not sure. But what I'd like to see in North Carolina and all over is that we provide education to people, that we get people out of these first-time jobs, these minimum wage jobs, and get them into high-paying manufacturing jobs, that we get them into other jobs or trades or vocations that's, marine auto repair or welding or HVAC or something like that. Something that we need to get people, the service industry's there and it pays a certain amount. So I don't want to be overly burdened to businesses, but also we need to, if we can get our population educated, then we can simply move into better paying jobs. I think it was Roy Cooper during his debate the other day. He said that when companies come here, they're not looking for tax incentives, or maybe they are a little bit, but they're looking for, do they have the workforce that can support the type of jobs that he wants to bring to this country, bring to the state? And I think we can do that with education, K-12, and then also in our community colleges and in our state colleges and universities.
Okay, very briefly, let's say that you follow your underdog pattern and you win, and it's now 2022, you're looking back, how is the 7th District better for your having served? What's the biggest change?
So I really do believe that if you elect one of your own, if you elect one who's brought up and been raised in this nation, in this country, in this southeastern North Carolina, that's grew up on a farm, that knows the power of education, and relationships, the power of relationships between the state, local, and federal government, between businesses. I think the power of the congressman is more than just that of laws. I think it's building those relationships and getting industry to come here, getting Raleigh to notice this area more, getting the federal government to notice this area more. So just simply to reach out to people and try to get people more interested in southeastern North Carolina, be a bigger advocate. You know, the squeaky wheel gets the oil type thing. Well, if you're all the time in someone's face, if you're all the time asking, then more than likely They'll say, okay, here's a little something for you, but I want more than a little something. I want a lot of something for Southeastern North Carolina.
You are listening to the Coastline Candidate Interviews. Chris Ward, candidate for North Carolina's 7th Congressional District, thank you very much for joining us today. We're going to take a short break. We will be back in a moment. Stay with us. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn for Coastline.